Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Anyone can experience a mental health issue. However, African Americans may experience more severe forms of mental health conditions due to unmet needs and other barriers. And Black men face far greater mental health challenges due to unrealistic societal and cultural expectations. Joining me here in the studio, I welcome FAMU students. I welcome Michael Curry. Michael is a graduate of FAMU. His major was psychology. He is the co-founder of FLOE, F-L-O-E, Finding Lines of Open Expression. He's into poetry, and he's an author.
Peace, family. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Bakari Avenue is a graduate student at FAM. In psychology, his interests are photography and film.
Hey, thank you for having me as well.
Camille Lewis. Camille also is a graduate student in community psychology. She is a resident panelist. We're always glad to have her here.
Greetings.
And it was her idea to do, oh, that's fine. It was her idea to do this program. So many kudos to her. Asia Knowles. Asia is a first-year graduate student in community psychology. She's into sexual trauma in Black women.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. And Ari Kristen. Ari's a first-year graduate student, community psychology, psychological desensitization. Is that what you said?
Disengagement and racism.
Disengagement. Okay. Is that what this is? Oh, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I can't read your writing. I'm sorry. Okay.
Are you trying to say for a doctor?
No. Yes. No, but welcome you all. I'm always glad to have you here to discuss these issues. Because when I say mental health issues to you, what comes to mind? What do you think of when I say mental health issues? In African Americans now, we're talking about African Americans.
I think of stigma. I think of a lot of stigma and misinformation.
And like the normalizing of our like upbringing, especially a lot to do with our like childhoods, the things that we, like I said, normalize, that we just deal with, that we don't even realize that we're dealing with it.
Right.
I think of suppression of our emotions, and not acknowledging them.
Okay.
And I think of, like, a lot of just, like you said, like, suppressed trauma, just, like, things that we've dealt with that are seen as normal in our communities, that when you step outside of our communities, we see that these things are actually just manifestations of severe trauma just constantly being passed down from generation to generation.
And what I think about it is I just more so look at the unhealthy coping skills and the fact that we still haven't yet found better methods to be able to deal with some of the problems that we face, both internally but also externally.
Y'all got it. Y'all got all the answers. You got it right there. I mean, that's it. But when talking to you is like talking to the choir. What about your peers? I mean, what do they think? What I'm looking at is just trying to get to the general attitude that African Americans have when you talk about mental health and mental health issues.
I mean, one issue I think that it's like we're starting, like now, we're at an age where we can like be cognizant of like it happening. But once we go home to our parents or whatnot, they don't understand or they don't get it. Like I've been expressing myself about like mental health since I was like 16. And a lot of like family members that are older that are like more so in control of what goes on in my life never really understood. So it's like it's trying to educate from the bottom up, and it's like it's really hard.
And you have a lot of barriers fighting against you in that education. Okay.
And understanding that they, you know why they don't understand what you're talking about.
But well, because it's a foreign entity. It didn't exist for them. Mental health, you're nodding your head. What do you think?
I think specifically when I think about my peers, the thing that I've come to notice is that I have to kind of separate my peer group, right? Because there I do have a set peer group that's mm-hmm. been to college and that's kind of been like educated and generally they have more of an understanding with regards to mental health, not only in general, but as far as like their battles with mental health as well. But then I have to think about like the collective that I have at home and the people who didn't have the opportunity to like go to college. And not only do they not really think about their mental health as far as like the things that they could possibly be dealing with, but I don't think in general, like psychology or like mental health ever is a discussion that like they even mm-hmm. attempt to have. So here we can have those conversations, right? Everybody's been to college and everybody knows someone who knows that they have a mental exactly. illness. But when I go home, it's literally not even a thought for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I can echo that. A lot of times I'll get caught up with the mentality that we're talking about mental health more. It's more relevant. It's being discussed. But I work in the mental health field, and one of my coworkers made a comment when she said, it's not that it's being discussed more, it's that you're putting yourself in a position and you're surrounding yourself with it more. So I think sometimes even mm-hmm. I'm blinded because when I'm in my professional environment, I'm it's a mental health. That's
right.
What we talk about.
That's what it's about. Right.
But when I go back, like he said, to the people I grew up with and my childhood friends, that sector of individuals, it's not – I don't even think it's a thought in the back of their mind. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's normalized. Trauma is the way it is. We think the way that we think. We act the way that we act. And that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. So I definitely echo that.
We as Black people, we have a lot of external pressures that are necessarily confiding on us all at one time. So a lot of times when things happen to us, our response to certain things, we don't understand why it's necessarily happening or we'll attribute it to something that's not really the cause. Mm-hmm. And honestly, for the talk that honestly comes up or what seems to be reoccurring is why people don't want to address their mental health is we as Black people have so many obvious, tangible issues, like from the stuff going on in our home, from the color of our skin being offensive to other people when we happen to just go out in public. Mm-hmm. So as far as when you fight those battles externally, it's hard to go about internally to say we're dealing with something that no one can seem to understand, especially when, again, we're fighting so many other battles on so many other fronts.
Well, you raised some good points, mm-hmm. Ari. We're going to come back to those, too. But thank you. Yes, ma'am.
I find that for my friend group, we've all kind of entered into this space where we're talking about mental health. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I understand that me and my friends come from, like, a privileged kind of background where health, not necessarily mental health, but, like, the health field was mm-hmm. always, like, mm-hmm. accepted. Because mm-hmm. the school that we went to was known for, just like, in the medical field for health. But it kind of translates when people begin to think about, like, overall health. But I will say, even when I have those conversations with people who are open to discussing mental health in Black people, my perspective is a lot different. Because I'm coming at it from a very, like, Afrocentric kind of space. And so some Black people, they may be ready to have that mental health discussion, but they may not conceptualize, like, the grand scheme of things. And, like, that the things that we're experiencing mental health-wise are part of a bigger system, part of, like, a bigger manifestation of a bigger issue. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And, mm-hmm. like, that's the part that's been more frustrating for me, I think, because, like, my friends will listen to me talk about these kind okay. of things, which is, like, super great, and I'm so happy that they support me in that. But, like, just that
do they buy
disconnect.
Into it?
They do. They okay. really do. And, like, and that means a lot to me because I have also definitely been the person who, like Bakari said, like, I'm going home trying to talk about this, and it's going
that
over everybody's
question.
Head. Yeah, like, and not even just my family, but, like, my high school friends. Like, I've noticed just a separation from them in the sense that, like, I've grown in one direction and in one way, and they haven't grown in that same way, so we just can't relate on that level. And because mental health is something that is so important to me and it's literally what I'm dedicating my life to, it's hard for me to try to maintain those relationships with people who don't necessarily even want to understand where I'm coming
mm-hmm.
from.
Mm-hmm. How do you all deal with mental health issues in your families? Now that you are, from your perspective, because you have the knowledge to know what's going on. How do you address that? You know, you have somebody in your family that you clearly know has some serious issues, okay, right now. Mm-hmm. But they're certainly not addressing it appropriately. And you take it from there. Yeah. Whoever. Go on, Ari. Go okay. on.
Look, at this point,
right now.
Yes, ma'am. Look, at this point, what I can say is, based off the training I was blessed to be able to get from FAMU psychology department, mm-hmm. been able to, when you see those problems, you can approach it in a different way. And most times what we're dealing with when you talk about mental health is people being given medication to necessarily mm-hmm. just put a Band-Aid over the problem. And instead, they don't actually have support systems or actually programs in place and in home and actually when they go out to make sure that they're successful. And so at this point, that's what I've been able to do is necessarily talk to the decision makers for the people who take care of them
okay.
to necessarily go about saying, okay, hey, let's try to implement this instead of doing this. So that way we could try to provide overall a better care. And depending on what I can say is how persistent people are, because, you know, when we as black people or just anybody, when you want something, you'll go after it. So as far as especially when you're talking about someone you love, you have to be willing sometimes to fight for that. And so okay. it doesn't mean so don't be hesitant to be able to do that. But that's what I've been able to take and do thus far.
OK.
For me personally, when it comes to like my family or whatever, it's trying to push a conversation that's people are pushing against to have. Uh-huh. And because you have to start, so you have to make the people aware, or your family aware that, hey, although we've been doing this for how many years, it's unhealthy. And it's like, well, that's what, da, 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 and it's normal. And it's like, it's not. It's mm-hmm. it's normalized, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's still abnormal. And so before you get to the part where you can, like, talk people into even getting to the point where they, you know, like Ari said, seek medical attention or professional help. You have to be able to try to get them to understand, like, hey, it's not okay. Like, my mom, she tell me all the time, she's just like, I feel like every time, like, when I was younger, she used to say this, I feel like every time I talk to you, something's a problem. Like, I'm saying that something, someone, like, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. Now she's like, and that's crazy, I'm just not realizing this. She's like, now every time I talk to you, I feel like I learned something else. And it's so beautiful. Like, I feel like she don't even understand how much that means to hear that and to mm-hmm. hear that type of, like, new, what's the word I'm looking for? Reaction. So
there's some growth there. Mm-hmm. I mean, she may not be aware of what I hear you saying, mm-hmm. but she's definitely made some strides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful to see. It's just like, all these tears and all this, like, crying and fighting and arguing. It's like, look at us. Look at us getting somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So it's beautiful. It's just, you have to be able to get people to see that, hey, even though you might not see a problem, there could be, like, better. There could be improvement here. So, mm-hmm.
All right. Well, hold your thoughts. I'm going to come right back to you, AJ. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. I have the FAMU contingency. I welcome again Michael Curry, Bricario Avenue, Camille Lewis, Asia Knowles, Ari Kristen. I was interrupting you, Asia. Feel free to say what you were going to say, okay?
Okay, thank you. I just want to hit real quick on something Bakari said, and not so much what you said, but just like knowing that we're both from small towns, that has such a major impact on how our family receives and perceives what we're saying. Like, I'm originally from a small town in Mississippi. So, like, mental health is just not, it is not discussed. It is not really. You just keep rolling with the punches, you know?
Even when somebody has something visibly.
You don't speak on it. It's just like. You just don't address it. Mm-hmm. And you know that it's there. And, like, you may interact with that person differently. But it's never a productive conversation of, this is what's wrong with this person mentally. Like, what are some tools? What are some things we can do? How can we reach out? How can we help? You know? And, it's just super interesting to see, like, or to hear Ari say that, like, his family seems to be just a little more receptive to that, and, like, knowing that Ari's from a bigger city, and, like, that has a big impact just on people's just whole existence, honestly, but especially with mental health.
Oh, I agree strongly. You know, we were just talking about, I mean, coming from Detroit to Tallahassee,
mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. When you asked Asia about the physical element, mm-hmm. when it becomes a physical problem, they seek physical solutions. Mm-hmm. And that is a part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. When it becomes a physical problem, they seek physical solutions, or the person has now turned to like a substance, like, mm-hmm. like solution for themselves mm-hmm. to cope. Mm-hmm. So now mental health is still not being discussed because mm-hmm. now we're looking at other remedies instead of talking about the actual or possible problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the one thing that I've kind of like learned, well, one, I have to say that especially when it comes to like your family and so on and so forth, like learning how to kind of like spoon feed them has been like a learning process for myself, right? Because in the beginning you get all this information, you're confronted with all these different facts and these theories. It's like, okay, I'm finna solve my whole family, like all the generational trauma that's existed for hundreds of years. I'm gonna be the one to get us, right? You go and in so many ways when you speak to them, you have to speak to them from this like place of like superiority and so on and so forth, and nobody wants to be spoken down to. And the reality is, in so many ways, as far as the issues that they like encounter daily, right? Although like mental health is important, like to them, they have all these different things that come before mental health. Like it's crazy.
And they don't see how that mental health interfaces right. with all those different things that they're talking
especially,
about in the
so
first
for me
place.
For me to come and say like, okay, we need to start focusing on your depression and so on and so forth, when like people are hungry or people don't have like jobs and so on and so forth, these things that are in so many ways contributing to the depression, right? It sounds like crazy. Mm-hmm. So to come to that understanding, and then now I'm at a place where, like, what I do is keep myself open. What I do is, like, seek to have conversations, not even necessarily specifically, I should say, pertaining to mental health, but just opening that door so that they feel comfortable sharing with me, right? Because we do still have that, like, that stigma of, like, okay, I have to keep things to myself and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. So before I even get to that point, it's about building a relationship. Now in me building a relationship, I can drop little tidbits when they do, like, speak on different things about the things that are concerning them. Now I can say, like, oh, okay, that could be a symptom of depression. And now I can give them the space to ask me, okay, so what is that? What exactly does that entail? Mm-hmm. And now I can speak about, okay, it entails this, with the understanding that although I have like some knowledge, right, like I'm not the fix, right? And in so many ways, I have to start thinking about the other barriers that stand in the way right. of them having access to like counseling and so on and so mm-hmm. forth, and just being realistic, not only with regards to like their needs, but with regards to what I can give them, I think, mm-hmm. in some ways.
Okay. I saw you nodding.
Yeah, I think just to echo what Mike was saying in regards to speaking to family, or really just speaking to anybody in the community or your peer group about the information that we've encountered, I know especially in the psychology program at FAMU, we get a lot of knowledge. Just being aware of the history in our community, but ways that we can translate what we're saying into a way that makes sense. So I think about the church, that the church is real big in the Black community, but there's right. things that go on in the church that could be, comparable to what we do in mental health. When you talk about speaking with somebody, a lot of people speak to their pastor or speak to somebody in church, kind of like in a therapy session. Healing circles that are popular in, you know, different communities. You have that in the church when you hold hands and you pray. So, you know, there's things. So I think just kind of finding ways to connect with people and using the terminology that they're familiar with can kind of help them to see how mental health is important and how it's impacting them. And then I had another point, but I forgot what I wanted to say.
Well, when you think of it, we'll come back to you. Okay.
Look, Michael and Camille really hit it on the point. As far as it really is all about us, is you have information, it's about minding your response about mm-hmm. when you do get faced with those barriers. Because, look, I want to be the first one on the record to say, oh, look, I may have some successful attempts, but believe me, I got a lot of no's. Like, this is how it is. Man, I don't got to deal with this. I got this bottle of pills. This is working for me. Mm-hmm. So, like, no. But as far as just being able to let someone know that you constantly care, because like Camille was talking about, there are a lot of things that people already do in their course of their regular lives that even though we may not feel it's the most optimal thing, you can still try to turn that or into the best it can be for that person, and especially just working within what they have. So as far as being able to constantly know that if someone does tell you no, it's not something, an attack against you. Mm-hmm. It's about what at that just moment they may not be ready, or and at the same time, you may not have been ready as well. So it's about understanding it's a two-way street, but being a just open and mindful of, again, knowledge is power. So understand that what you do with it, how you interact with the person, really can determine how successful that information is getting communicated.
And some people that espouse having knowledge really don't. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I know this is stepping on toes, but the church is not always the answer. The church indeed may be the problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, that you know, you don't always get, because the church has its own hang-ups too. Mm-hmm. And they have their own stigma. So you have to be very careful when you select religion, religiosity, spirituality, because you walk on a narrow tightrope, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and I think we, you know, it has to be addressed, to put it that way. And I know that's something that, you know, Black people, we don't say nothing about that church.
Yeah, ironically, okay. With all the R. Kelly stuff that's been coming out, mm-hmm. the conversation has drifted. So if we can tackle R. Kelly and deal with the issues around, you know, messing with underage girls, when are we going to tackle what the church does and the abuse that goes on and the trauma that goes on in the church? Is that going to be discussed in the Black community too?
Because we know they got some real stigmas that are handicapping. Yes, go ahead.
Even such as like using prayer as a way to not talk about problems.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God, I'm going through so much today. Da 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 da.
Pray about it.
And I'm like, Grandma, I'm tired of praying about your child. I'm mm-hmm. sick of it. So
what I will say is, I think this past Sunday, right, I went to church, and it's probably the first time. I don't want to say, because, you know, I don't want my auntie to trip.
I'm about to say who you done told.
But the thing that I became like aware of, right, is how much awareness alters the way that you like look at church. So in me like sitting there and having like some sort of understanding of like different spiritual concepts and so on and so forth, now when they speak to me, I see things differently. Right now when they speak and they shout about Christ, or they start talking about prayer and so on and so forth, beyond me just seeing it as like prayer and shouting about Christ, I see it as the same affirmations that we do with regard to spirituality. I see speaking about Christ as the same way that we speak about our like appeal to our higher self, whatever that higher nature is, right? And there's so many words that like really it just amounts to like semantics, right? And like you use this one word and you use this one word, but at their like root they mean the same thing, or their attempt is to bring out like the same feeling. So I definitely like get it as far as like just being able to relate this concept of like spirituality to religion, which at its roots, at to me, you feel me, like in most ways, do have the same objective. Now, different people, you know, like use it in the way that they want to use it, because it's not everyone who uses concepts of like spirituality and so on and so forth use it the way that it maybe should be used, if I can say that. So it is, to me, first and foremost about like finding that common understanding, like what's the common ground. Okay, you believe in God, well, I believe in God as well. You know, it might not be the same type of thing, but at the root, you know, if God is love or it's energy or whatever it is, like, okay, that's a common understanding that we have, and now based on that we can build. And because I have the awareness, it takes little effort, or I would assume less effort, for me to like come to where you are and kind of like bring you to where I am, as opposed to like you coming to where I am and trying to bring me to where you are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I think that's perfect. What we kind of need to recognize is that regardless where you're talking about religiosity or spirituality, the whole goal is about being able to live as close to a perfect life as possible. At least that's what pretty much every book ends up summing up to, about trying to live the best life that you can. And so at this point, like, we have to be, like Michael said, be able to try to bridge those divides, because we as Black people are fighting wars on so many fronts. And the fact that we a lot of times let the barriers about where we necessarily worship, where we work, where we live, and all these other socioeconomic and even just necessarily
cultural
barriers, yes ma'am, that can, or even racial ones that continue to divide us. We let those things necessarily become those that stop us from reaching over the aisle to be able to help somebody or to be able to talk. And because at the end of the day, if I'm talking especially to the Black and brown people out here, we have too many issues to be squabbling amongst each other and necessarily be worried about, oh, where do I necessarily worship? But where can we find that common ground necessarily built for our total liberation? Mm-hmm. Because we, again, people, we do have problems with white supremacy and racism.
Indeed. What about the mistrust of the system? And I say the mistrust of the system, I'm talking about the misdiagnosis, the lack of a cultural competence or sensitivity by other health professionals that we see in the first place. Mm-hmm. You raised it, discrimination, all right. You know, the whole social, economic, all of those factors play into our attitudes and our actions when it comes to mental health. I don't know if you all agree, disagree.
No, definitely, definitely. White supremacy and racism is just so insidious in the way that it just seeps into every aspect of our existence as Black and brown people. And it just manifests in so many different ways. So it will only logically make sense that it manifests in mental health. And when you look at the history of organizations like APA, they were founded by racists. That's what those people were. The eugenics movement, all of these things that at their core are racist. So if you have something that was founded on racism, it only makes sense that the racism continues to manifest itself throughout. So maybe right now we may not be doing race psychology or eugenics, but those ideologies are still being taught. Like, people are still learning Freud. Like, that's a whole nother conversation. But, like, I mean, like, when you have people being taught the ideologies of races, they're practiced even though it may not be intentional. Because I will say, I think that a lot of mental health practitioners do not know that what they're learning and teaching is rooted in racism. And they go into it having the best of intentions. But you are not, what you're telling me to do is not culturally relevant, and what you have learned is not culturally relevant. So therefore, you cannot help me because you do not understand my culture. I need someone who understands my culture to help me, because culture drives so much, especially our perceptions of mental health. So I need someone who understands where I'm coming from, or someone who even has the decency to say, I don't understand where you're coming from. Let me refer you to someone who does, you know, and like letting that ego go and like stopping the ego trip. Like, you can't help that person, and that is okay. Refer them to someone who can. But the lack of cultural training and cultural competency within mental health has been so detrimental to Black people. You have little Black boys out here being diagnosed with ADHD. They do not have ADHD. Mm-hmm. They are just being little Black boys. Like, and you have little Black girls out here who are exposed to, like, the R. Kelly nonsense. Just, like, the nonsense and, like, the constant perpetuation of this hypersexuality of Black bodies and not understanding how a Black woman or girl who has experienced sexual trauma is going to internalize and perceive and respond to that completely different than a white woman. Because white women's bodies have not been hypersexualized in the way that Black girls' bodies have. So if you're working with people of a
preach.
It's just like, I just need y'all to be culturally competent. Like, that's it. Like, more of the story. That's it.
Hey, what else can we say? Go ahead.
So I do think, with all that in mind, right, and how she brought up to the APA, I think the important thing for us at this point, right, with under, I guess, with respect to, like, all the barriers they put in place with regards to us, like, obtaining our education and so on and so forth, is to continue to really, like, take some accountability in the sense that we have to continue to create organizations like the ABSI.
Right.
And beyond, like, organizations like that, us as, like, Black people have to, like, get into the position where we are being, like, the psychologist or the therapist. Because, like, my personal opinion, right, I'm a real, like, self-first, do-it-yourself type of person. Anytime that we, like, attempt to, like, rely on any other group of people to, like, facilitate our healing, right, we're in the wrong. Like, regardless of what we expect of them, like, as far as, like, having cultural competence or whatever, like, we do have the cultural competence because it's our culture, right? So in order, regardless of how much cultural competence they have, it's always going to be, like, secondary to the fact that, like, we need to be the people who are, like, getting into therapy, and we need to be involved in, like, healing our brothers and our sisters and so on and so forth. So anytime I think of, like, not only the stigma, but how do we approach, like, ridding ourselves of the stigma, and then how do we approach healing, right? It's always, it's never, my thought is never, okay, we need to go to these spaces and tell them, like, okay, you all need to do so on and so on and so forth to, like, appeal to us or to, like, help us. I think one of the things that, especially when we talk about, like, racism and so on and so forth, is why would this, like, group of people who benefit from racism and so on and so forth help the people that, like, aren't benefiting from it? Like, that's, it's almost counterproductive, right? At the end of the day, they're thriving because society is thriving in that way, right? So even in their attempts to, like, give us whatever healing that we seek, I think there will always be some sort of, like, barrier, because I can't teach you too much, right? Because if I teach you too much, okay, now that puts you in a position to either
compete
with me or, like, surpass me in so many ways. And that's fine. Like, I think in so many ways it's natural for a collective or a group to, like, kind of put themselves first in that way. I think even when we talk about ourselves, right, like, the thing that we teach ourselves or we want to teach ourselves is putting ourselves first, right? When we think about, like, jobs and so on and so forth, we talk about, like, nepotism and understanding that because we have this shared connection, okay, we there should be some type of, like, I don't want to say give, but there should be some sort of way where we kind of, like, give us more. We give ourselves, like, the benefit of the doubt, or we give in that sense, right? And that's, like, to me personally, that's fine, right? With the understanding that we live in this society as one, and so on and so forth. And because we are, like, all engaged in the society, we all should be seeking, like, the betterment of everyone. But as much as that's, like, an ideal, right, in the same way that, like, a utopian society is an ideal, right, is that realistic? I don't know if I feel like it's realistic, but I do think that it's realistic for us to say, okay, we're all connected in whatever ways. We all have this shared connection. And based on that, we should all be seeking to, like, improve and heal ourselves for no one else other than ourselves.
Thank you. I'm always interrupting you. But we got to take a break. You tuned in to 411 Team.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Team. I have students from FAMU in the psych department, graduate students, and we are talking about African Americans and mental health. Asia, as usual, I had to interrupt you, but we're getting back to you.
You're super good. Thank you. Just super quick response to what Mike said. You are, like, spot on. I think a lot of times we do look to, like, these European structures to kind of alter the way they've been operating for centuries, which is unrealistic, you know? But, like, also keeping that in mind, Black people are being taught these European concepts. Like, there aren't any Black psychology PhD programs. So, like, even though, let's specifically say you have your PhD in Black psychology, like, in that sense. So whereas, like, I'm not really concerned with trying to get white people to alter the way that they're operating, because I feel like that's a fruitless mission. What I am concerned with is getting Black people who have internalized this white ideology to say, hey, like, I know we come from the same culture, but just because we come from the same culture does not mean that you rock in the way that I'm rocking. Like, you're misoriented. Like, you're culturally misoriented, as Dr. Cambon would say, God bless him, rest his soul. But we have to, like, acknowledge that piece, because I think that's what stresses me out the most, because it's like there are Black psychologists who aren't Black psychologists. And, like, just making that distinction and being like, let me get my own people together and let us be all right. And then maybe we can worry about what's going on with other folks. And I definitely feel you on that.
Which leads us to talking about, you know, we're getting our own. What about the African-American male? Now, when it comes to mental health, they have the worst. They're at the bottom. And there are a number of risk factors there. I mean, we can start now. I guess we need to talk about that. Particularly, their stoicism. You know, there's not supposed to express emotion. Y'all ain't supposed to. I mean, our culture says that now. You know it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not supposed to express your emotion. If you want to be a strong black man, then you swallow your pain. Okay? I mean, that's basically what it tells you. Of course, swallowing your pain, boy, you can get choked. Okay? I mean, that's what happened. You know, that is exactly what happens. But let's talk about what happened. What, as black males and females who interact with black male, what do you think are the issues there that prevent them from addressing mental health conditions and problems?
I think a big part of it is like this concept of like manhood,
mm-hmm.
and
stoicism.
How,
mm-hmm.
and I heard it in a podcast, like not recently, but I heard it, and it's about basically how your manhood is something that you have to like get maintained, but you have to work and continuously maintain it and not be stripped of it. But it's just that the concept of like what makes you a man is so, I don't know if it needs to be defined or redefined.
Or refined.
Because it's just like the, it's during what I watched, they talked about how when they were in their teens, how they like conceptualized their manhood, how it was like about getting girls, doing this, doing that, and these like toxic things. And then when they got older, it was about still getting girls, but you know, taking care of your children and X, Y, and Z. But it's so much more to being a, like, first a human and also a male human and a black male human. It's so much more than that. It's a tapping into of more than just, like, that energy. Because mm-hmm. you are more than just that one set of energy. Mm-hmm. And the idea of somebody can take something from you that you own is, it's crazy. But we literally live in a place, in an environment where, in history, they have literally stripped us of everything. So to think and to conceptualize somebody can strip you of that once again, it's scary. And it's mm-hmm. it's understandable, but it's not an optimal like way to feel.
And it also, from my perspective, makes you vulnerable. And being vulnerable is
fear.
Fear. Mm-hmm. It's a major issue. I mean, I want to hear from all of you.
I think communication, because I speak to a lot of black males who are able to express mm-hmm. the pain that they are feeling with me, a female, but they don't feel comfortable expressing it to each other. So if you're, I mean, this is, again, my perception as a woman. Yeah. If you're a black man, I don't think they see a lot of other black men expressing it, but they'll go to a female and express it. So I mm-hmm. think part of the solution is kind of like the story I told you, just being able to check your homeboy, mm-hmm. but also being able to express love and affection and like hug your homeboy and you know, have those conversations about manhood.
So I think to me, what it boils down to is being able to explore self, right? I think mm-hmm. in so many ways, especially when it comes to like our concepts of manhood or like, maleness or whatever the case may be, where we're taught to kind of like view ourselves from the lens of other people,
mm-hmm.
all right? So it's even in our, like, attempting to attain success in whatever ways, right? It's so you can be able to, like, take care of your own family. Like, from the time we're, like, young boys, like, especially growing up in the areas that some of us grow up in, right, from the time you're, like, young, but especially when you think about, like, the fact that many of us grew up in single-parent households and single-mother households specifically, right? Okay, now you're the man of the house, right? From, like, the time you were able to, like, speak on some stuff, right? And as the man of the house, you have duties. You're supposed to be able to provide for everyone. You're supposed to be able to take care of everyone, do all these different things, but you never are really, like, told, like, okay, you're supposed to do these things for yourself first and foremost. The reason that you need to be an amazing person is because it's just beneficial to be an amazing person, not necessarily because it's going to benefit someone else. I think also in, like, one of the things that we have to, like, kind of talk about is the reality that, like, so many black men grow up in, right? Like, our society, in my personal opinion, like, breeds sociopaths, right? Mm-hmm. Specifically as it pertains to like, the black mm-hmm. community and black men, right? Because, one, they're telling you, like, you can't feel. And then, on the other hand, right, you're experiencing all these different traumatic things. Like, that's before right. I was 15, I lost, like, a whole lot of friends, right? And to be able to, like, lose a lot of friends, to be able to be told, like, okay, in you losing a lot of friends, you're supposed to behave as if you're like, it's normal.
You've got
like
that you anger and desensitize resentment. Yourselves,
right? You stop feeling all these different things. So now when you're 25 years old and this, you meet this woman or you meet this person and they're asking you, like, how do you feel? Well, I've had my feelings turned off from like 5 up until this point, probably before then, because coming out the womb, like babies, a baby can literally cry and they'll tell, oh, no, you're supposed to be a man in this moment. Like you're an infant, right? And they have, I was.
Somebody hit you.
Yeah. I think I was just reading a study about how like parents from the time babies are born, they respond to like boys and like girls differently. So when the girl cries or whatever the case may be, they coddle them and they bring them close and they do this man, both the father and the mother. But when the son cries, they keep him at a distance. Right. And they tell him like, oh, no, you're not supposed to cry. And this you're told this from like the time you're an infant on up until to the time you're grown, right? And now you're trying to like have relations with different people, whether that be like romantic relations or platonic relations, and people are expecting you to like feel and to like offer this like sense of emotion that you've literally never connected to, in conjunction with everything else that you may encounter, whether that be drugs or whatever it may be, that like also like desensitizes you.
Okay.
Pretty much what the problem seems to be from overarching view is a lack of being able to communicate. And when I say that, it's not because you don't have the tools to know how to do so. It's because generally, let's say when you do expound those things, whether it be from society or unfortunately, we don't always have lovely people like Camille in our lives. So some of us, we necessarily
don't have that.
Exactly.
That ear.
No, none of them. And so like Mike was talking about, you could either be the man of the house or you just have to be the leader of your own friend group necessarily. It can necessarily breed where you go about telling your feelings and you're not able to go about having any reception that is what you need to go ahead and be a conducive and productive human being. At this current moment, the black male, like Bakari was saying, the black male, the definition of not what just a man is, I say what a black man is, because that's the most that's the critical thing that needs to be defined as far as what it means to that you don't have to be this macho personification, yeah. That you're allowed to be someone that feels something. But oftentimes it's, again, like we've all been sentiments and the world doesn't allow that to happen. But more so for the black male to be able to have a space that he is able to go about sharing, at first we have to go about realizing that his sharing is not him complaining, that his sharing is not him griping, his sharing is not him blaming you. His sharing is not none of these things. His sharing is just how anyone else does, is being able to release and being able to try to connect with someone who may feel that same struggle.
Yeah.
So mine is more of a question, is what do you think as a community we need to do to help facilitate this emerging, changing definition of manhood, to create a space in our community where black men feel comfortable?
I want to like take that, the beginning of that. I think that all of us are like, you know, everybody, like I said, everybody wants kids. But for those who wants kids, I think that, like, go back to what he was saying, the difference of how they raise, like, little boys and little girls, I think it starts, they start there, where it's just like, they won't even see a change. They just know, let's normalize something new, something better, something improved. And, like, instead of, like, pulling your son back and let him cry and saying, your boy, stop crying, hold your sons, like, give them a little more love. Give them love, the love that you give your daughters, you know? Like, it's literally proven that when a young man has a close relationship to his mom, they're more in depth to be leaders when they grow up. It's like, show them, let's start anew. Let's start in those spaces so when our kids grow up, they won't have to be succumb to a changing system where it's like, okay, let's start here. Let's start there and then, you know, progress into something that we can affect with people that are not kids no more now. But when we start with them, let's start with them while they are a smaller them.
And I think it also is like a twofold kind of thing. Like first we need to say that femininity is not a negative, because a lot of it comes from being feminine, being related to being weak. And once we define being feminine as like not a negative aspect, then we can redefine manhood for black men, because a lot of it is, that's a feminine quality. Why are you doing that? Like a lot, it turns into, that's gay. And the issue that I found that black men have with this concept of something being gay or a man, another black man being gay, they don't even necessarily care about the physical acts of being gay. They care about it being feminine. So
perception.
It's the perception of men being feminine. Because for so long, black men were just taught that it's not okay to be feminine. And the things that we began to associate with femininity are things that aren't even feminine. Mm-hmm. Like expressing yourself has become associated with being feminine. So a lot of black men don't express themselves because they've been conditioned to think that that is a feminine quality. And like you said, it does start with infancy because so many times I hear black mothers and fathers tell their little boys don't cry, little boys don't do this. Like that's something that little girls do. And it's just like, well, what makes crying feminine? Like what makes the expression of emotion a feminine act? But then also, why are we associating femininity with a negative? And a lot of that we have to understand is tied back to these Eurocentric ideals, because Afrocentricity does not devalue or overvalue one over the other. They're equally balanced. So in a truly like Afrocentric mindset, it's not a concern with the masculine or the feminine, because you appreciate and you respect and you understand the value of both. But because we live in a Eurocentric society where Europeans don't typically value women, they don't value femininity, they don't, those things aren't of value to them. And you can look at that in the way that they treat their women. But black men have also internalized this Eurocentric mindset. So now black men are devaluing their women. Black men are devaluing femininity. So when they see femininity within themselves, they don't, it's like, oh, maybe I'm not a man. Let me do this. Let me carry myself this way. So I think that when we redefine what masculinity is and redefine what femininity is and understand that those two are both equal, both important, both housed within the same body. Because like Bakari was alluding to this, we have masculine and feminine energy within all of us. And even if you don't believe it at a spiritual level, you can look at it at a biological level. We all have estrogen and testosterone. So we're all capable of having this masculine and this feminine. And how we choose to express that does not have to be a negative thing. And I think we just need to show that to our black boys that it is okay for you to be yourself, whoever yourself is, as long as it is your best, most productive self.
I think the one thing I would add to what you're saying, Asia, is not just the femininity, but we also look at intellectual or emotional intelligence as being not male, black male.
Yes.
That would be the only thing I would add. You know, I'd add that part to it.
It's that imbalance is kind of like popularized, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you're more masculine than you are feminine. Like it's popular. It's even in like the black gay community. Mm-hmm. It's popular. It's cool to not have such like feminine ways about yourself. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is, it's not healthy. Same way you just said, it's truly unhealthy. It's more ideal to have those and embrace them both, because when you start like shrinking yourself down or another part of yourself, it creates a different type of like self-concept for yourself, which is also like equates to like negative like mental health. Mm-hmm. And it's like how we both said, it goes back to, we do need to redefine masculinity, but we also would have to redefine femininity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think one of my like favorite quotes, right, is think globally, act locally, right? And I say that because like to really understand how pervasive this issue is, like beyond just like hood areas and so on and so forth, it's literally infiltrated every aspect of like maleness, to the point like it's even in entertainment, which is really like what drives a lot of our culture today, right? It's like it's a staple of entertainment. To like remove that is to like change drastically what we consider like entertainment today. So with that understanding, it's, to me, it's not as simple as, okay, so what can we do, right? Because, I mean, at this point, you're talking about changing millions, millions of men. Like, literally, I think it's that pervasive. So it is, as people who, like, are aware, right, you act with the people that you know, right? Like, one of I remember, like,
I'm
this
I had to cut you,
no problem.
Sure. You say I'm looking at the clock. I was like, oh, no, I don't have enough time. You've been listening to 411 Teen, and I have had FAMU students here, dynamic folks in a super, super conversation. To my listening audience, thank you for your ear and your time. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. The 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.